We industrialized animal agriculture. We didn't industrialize plant-based meat. And as a result, large-scale manufacturing of plant-based meat has not been explored to the degree necessary in order to really bring the industry to the modern day. Roughly speaking, it would cost you to buy a good quality chicken nugget, usually about $3.20 a pound. Right now, most plant-based meat is about twice that. What we need to do is get down to that $3.20. What we have been doing at Rebellious is we went back to first principles and we said, if we had to make this type of plant-based meat, we call it mix and form plant-based meat, it is we designed brand new production equipment from the ground up. We basically said, how would this look if we were doing it the right way? And then we built that new system, the Mach 1 production system. And that's how we started the very first step of industrializing the production of plant-based meat.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sirani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we talk with Christy Legale, CEO of Rebellious Foods. No harm, no foul. She joins us from Seattle, Washington. Welcome, Christy.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
With the conversations about climate change, with President Biden signing the Inflation Reduction Act, amongst other things, it has strict goals and targets and guidelines to reduce impact on our environment. In John Doerr's latest book, Speed and Scale, he states that food contributes to about 15% of all the greenhouse gases. What percent of that is caused by raising livestock and meat consumption?
There are a lot of different metrics by which we can measure the impact of climate change because of the food industry in general. I believe the actual metric was about 14.5% of climate emissions actually could be tied back to animal agriculture specifically. So it might be a slightly different metric than the one you just mentioned. But it is a significant amount regardless. And it isn't the only impact that we see from industrial animal agriculture. Obviously, we see other impacts like pollution of waterways, runoff of nitrates and fertilizers and things like that for products that are plants that are grown to feed animal in the animal agriculture industry. And of course, use of antibiotics. So there's a lot of other fallout besides just climate change.
I think the key word is industrial.
Yes.
Because mankind has obviously been eating meat from the very beginning. What do you define as industrial?
The history of what we consider now colloquially called factory farming of animals is actually a relatively recent phenomena, even recent within, you know, modern era history. So we actually didn't start industrializing the production of animals until actually around or after World War II. So it was actually closer to about 1940s to the 1960s that we really started to see the intensification of industrial animal agriculture. There obviously was meat processing, there were animal raising, there was obviously farms and small farms and operations prior to 1940 and even prior to 1920. But there wasn't the kind and scale that we see today, that it's very, very different.
What changed and what happened in the 1940s?
What changed is really the Industrial Revolution. So when we look at CO2 emissions in the atmosphere, we often point them back to really the mid-1800s and then really spiking up at around the 1920s to the 1940s when we really start to see CO2 and other related methane emissions start to really turn the curve for climate emissions and then even the temperature of the atmosphere or temperature of the earth. That was around, so it was industrialization overall that was applied to animal meat production that really changed. So it was alongside everything else.
But industrialization of food is not so bad. We have far fewer hungry people in the world than we had in the 1920s. You know, there were rations, there were people had long lines. Maybe it's worth it.
You know, there was a lot of very specific reasons for why people felt that industrializing animal agriculture was important. And you're absolutely right. First of all, bringing a chicken to every pot was a mantra that was shouted out by the government and president at the time, who basically said, we really need to feed everybody. Everybody should have access to high quality food and specifically high quality meat. And so we applied industrialization to the raising and slaughtering and processing of animals because we were trying to feed more people with high quality food. That was absolutely necessary. It was also only one way we could have gone about doing it. There were other ways that we could have gone about doing it. It didn't have to be the industrialization of animal agriculture. We could have industrialized pulse farming. We could have industrialized green beans and lentils. We could have industrialized other types of foods that, you know, took meat off the center of the plate, at least in the United States, where it is very much the center of the plate, and focused on a non-center of the plate use of meat in our scaling of the food production system in the United States. But of course, there are other countries in the world where meat is also the center of the plate, you know, South America as well, but there are also places in the world where meat is not the center of the plate. There's a lot of different other models that could have been scaled, but didn't. I'm sure there are some really interesting anthropological reasons for that. Overall, you know, this is what we did. And it's interesting because meat alternatives or the, you know, plant protein alternatives to meat, which were actually pretty interesting at the time prior to 1940, just didn't get scaled like industrial animal agriculture did.
I am a generational vegetarian. I was surprised that only 5% of adult Americans call themselves vegetarians. I didn't know I belonged to this sliver, this little group which doesn't eat meat.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's interesting to note for a country like India, where there's a very large population and roughly one third or potentially more, I haven't looked in a few years, but one third or more claim to be or are vegetarian. You know, they call themselves vegetarian. That is actually more people than all the people in the United States. That means there are more vegetarians in India than there are people in the United States. But you're absolutely right. In the United States, really roughly 5% or less of people call themselves or identify as vegetarian. And as a result, you know, I could be a reflection of the focus on the center of the plate American cuisine. It could have been a reflection of just the values of the government and the values of decision makers be influencing a lot of other people about why we scaled animal meat. And as a result, it made it very inexpensive. And so it made it the center of the plate as well as made it accessible to pretty much every economic class.
Could it have been the weather?
Could it have been the weather? I don't know.
We didn't have that many industrial greenhouses in those days. You need the meat. Some of my meat-eating friends say, in winter, I need to eat meat. So it could have been the weather. There's no scientific basis to my claim, but maybe people felt that they need the fat.
Perhaps. I mean, I think there's the individual person's choice, and then there's the societal choice about what is our norms. If you go to a restaurant in the United States in 1975, you're not going to find a vegetarian option. Were people not vegetarian because they weren't buying those options, if they even were there, or were they just not any options, so they gave up? The resistance to vegetarianism and veganism in the United States has been very strong. You know, the desire not to accommodate those particular food groups is still largely the norm. However, it's changed a lot in the last 10 years, and it's changed a lot in the last 20 years. And I myself have been a vegan for about 27 years. And as a result, I've seen it go from just largely unavailable to somewhat available in certain places in the United States. Now, I can still travel easily to a new place in the United States and find no vegetarian or vegan options, but it's less and less common than it was when it was the 1990s, right?
As a traditional vegetarian, we are taught or intuitively know how to balance our meal.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually caution my meat-eating friends from just giving up meat and going all vegan or vegetarian, because it's not just that you're eating plants or plant-based things. There is a whole nutritional balance which is important.
Yeah. And I think that that nutritional balance is true no matter what you eat. So if you are eating a lot of meat and you're not getting a lot of greens, you're not getting a lot of tomatoes, you're not getting lentils and pulses and fiber and things like that, which obviously makes up even the majority of foods. I mean, there are thousands of foods we can eat. Why is the bodies of chickens, pigs, and cows so outsized in the menus of so many of our menus, so to speak, when other things are just as important? As generational vegetarians in different parts of the world know, that humans can live incredibly successfully, if not even more successfully, without eating meat. But a balanced diet is going to be necessary whether you eat meat or not eat meat. And as a result, it becomes kind of the same attention to detail should be applied. I once met a man who told me he only ate meat. And he was serious. He only ate meat. He did not look well, that's for sure. So interesting about his decision to do that is he really kind of thought, well, you know, I'm getting enough protein, but what about B12? What about, you know, is he getting enough greens? Is he getting enough fiber? Is he getting enough calcium? Is he getting enough vitamin C? I mean, there's so many other things that we do need to consider when we consider a balanced diet.
When you talked about menus, it made me smile because for vegetarians, when they look at the menu, they can decide in 2 minutes because there's usually one, two items
yes.
on the entree, or maybe just two items in the whole 4 courses of a menu. So they come show you the menu, you look at it and say, yes, I'm having this one item that you have on the menu.
I find myself, you know, gravitating to restaurants that obviously have that traditional non-center of the plate use of meat. There's a wonderful restaurant by my house called the Everest Kitchen, which is both Himalayan and Indian cuisine. Their menu is like largely default vegetarian. And then, of course, they've got meat products as well. They can make almost anything vegan, and it's really great. Same thing as my Thai friends who have really fantastic vegetarian options. You know, Mandarin Chinese also have, or Buddhist Chinese is actually what I meant to say. Also, those types of restaurants, you know, can be very default veg. I do tend to gravitate towards those wonderful, absolutely flavorful meals because they would already be well balanced for, you know, both nutrition and taste and flavor and palatability.
So why did you become a vegan? What happened?
I became a vegan because I cared about animals and I didn't want to eat animals anymore. I first became a vegetarian when I was a teenager and really wanted to avoid meat even before that. I remember being quite young and maybe 12 or 14 years old and looking at my dog and had somebody explain to me that in other parts of the world, they eat dogs and they farm them for meat. And it just broke my heart, of course, as a lot of people have deep and meaningful and relationships with animals and they're a part of their lives, they're a part of their family. Even people who farm animals, you know, have sometimes deep relationships with them. That is something I really wanted to honor about myself. Decided that I didn't want to eat animals if this is the sentient beings that they present to be. Over time, I also decided I didn't want to eat dairy as well because of my desire to just avoid the industrialized dairy industry in the United States and what that does to cows and baby cows. And eggs as well, that industrialization of eggs in the chicken industry as we put them in tiny cages and we don't treat them very well. And I really didn't want to be a part of that. So what I found was that, especially once I went vegan, I actually didn't weigh very much. I'm 5'8". I think I weighed like maybe 90 pounds when I was 19 years old. So I was very thin, maybe 100 pounds at most. And a lot of it's because I really didn't enjoy food that much. When I went vegan, I will never forget, I felt so much better because it turns out I was very allergic to both dairy and eggs. I have a pretty serious allergy to both, but a lot of people do. A lot of people have serious allergies to foods without understanding that it was an option to not eat those in my earlier years. I didn't know to cut them out of my life. And turns out that I was a pretty well person. I just didn't sit well for those. I remember going vegan on a Monday and by Friday, pretty much every like congestion and lung problems I had was completely gone. It never came back in 27 years. I did accidentally eat eggs at one point a few years ago, and that was bad news. So
it seems to be kind of a fad now to have plant-based meat. You know, we have Beyond Meat, we have Impossible Burgers, and now Rebellious Foods. How is Rebellious Foods different?
I do like to answer the question of like, why even have plant-based meat? It's kind of a funny concept. But since I actually did some interesting research on plant-based meat and the history of plant-based meat, and it turns out that humans have been replacing meat with what's called meat analogs or meat replacements. So something that is kind of made up to look like meat or made up to be.
Tofu, for instance.
Tofu is a good example, although I think tofu somewhat stands on its own. But there are even more extreme examples where people have taken tofu, injected a lot of flavors in it, and then tried to carve it into the shape of a chicken. There is a couple of other earlier versions of tofu that were called dofu with a D, and some earlier versions of Indo-Chinese cuisine that had other versions of like kind of semi-made tofu that were also created to try to look like meat. Like the recorded history of plant-based meat actually goes back about 2,000 years, because we've known for a very long time as humans that meat has some detrimental health effects. And so people were trying to find ways to allow people not to eat meat. There are some really interesting ways that we've done that. And probably the most popular and the easiest and the most straightforward way was just to replace it with something that looked and tasted like it, but wasn't actually meat. That is why we have meat analogs even to this day, is because they serve a role in people's lives. There's a convenience to having a hamburger. There's a convenience to chicken nuggets. And that convenience is valuable to consumers. But if we can replace that with a less harmful version of those same products, then you don't have to change the entire system. You can literally just pull one smaller lever and change it and allow them to kind of continue with the convenience factor, the flavor factor, the ease of feeding your kids factor, without the detrimental impacts of eating meat.
So does your product taste like meat?
Exactly. So at Rebellious Foods, we make plant-based chicken nuggets, tenders, and patties. And so they taste like processed chicken products. So they taste like chicken nuggets and chicken tenders and chicken patties. We make chicken sandwiches out of them and things like that. We are a little different than other plant-based meat companies, is that we're really, really focused on democratizing plant-based meat for everyone. So to being able to produce plant-based meat at price parity with animal-based meat is our main goal at Rebellious Foods. And one of the reasons that plant-based meat is too expensive today, it's usually 2 to 3 times the cost, sometimes even more than that, versus the product it's replacing. The reason it is so expensive is because it costs too much to make it. And the reason for that ends up going back to that history we talked about earlier. We industrialized animal agriculture. We didn't industrialize plant-based meat. And as a result, large-scale manufacturing of plant-based meat has not been explored to the degree necessary in order to really bring the industry to the modern day. We make a lot of plant-based meat the same way we make things in our kitchen, just batch processing and trying to mix things together, kind of hoping for the best. That is not a good way to make plant-based meat, and it certainly doesn't replicate the size, scale, modernization of the 108 billion pounds of animal meat production in the United States alone. What Rebellious has been doing behind the scenes, our company name is actually Seattle Food Tech. Behind the scenes, we have kind of a corporate company called Seattle Food Tech, and then we sell under the name Rebellious Foods. Seattle Food Tech, I started in late 2017, early 2018, with this idea that I could actually bring a lot more and higher quality and better plant-based meat products if I could industrialize the production. And this goes back to your point, industrialization, you know, may have caused some concerns, particularly around animal welfare, but industrialization itself actually does bring benefits to the consumer. And it brings safety benefits. It makes food safer. It makes food more available. It makes food less expensive. It makes foods more consistent. What we have been doing at Rebellious is we went back to first principles and we said, if we had to make this type of plant-based meat, we call it mix-and-form plant-based meat, which is a different type than high moisture extrusion that people probably hear a lot about, but represents a very small, tiny print of the market. Mix-and-form production of plant-based meat is capable of making is basically the entire industry. And what we did is we designed brand new production equipment from the ground up. And we said, okay, we basically said, how would this look if we were doing it the right way? If it was processing all the proteins the right way, processing the fats the right way, bringing it all together so it was just right and high quality. And then we built that new system. We called it the Mach 1 production system. And that's how we started the very first step of industrializing the production of plant-based meat. So several years on, we're still working on that. And in about 10 months, we hope to deploy our first commercial system that will bring down the cost of our plant-based meat products at Rebellious by 60%.
So say you have your traditional chicken nuggets, a good quality one at that, and you have chicken nuggets made by your competitors and yours. How much would it cost me to buy theirs and yours?
Roughly speaking, it would cost you to buy a good quality chicken nugget made out of a chicken, usually about $3.20 a pound. Right now, most plant-based meat is about twice that. It's about $6-ish a pound, sometimes as low as $5.50 a pound. So it's quite a lot more. And even Rebellious is selling our products closer to that $5.50 a pound range. What we need to do is get down to that 3